The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. Airing first on Asheville FM, WSFM LP at 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina, this is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. Also, if you are interested in rebroadcasting any episode or segment of the show, you are free to do so. Just send us an email if you end up using any of the content. If you like, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, P.O. Box 6004, Asheville, North Carolina, 28816. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. You can find a sample of Firestorm's catalog of books and zines, plus a full calendar of events at their website, firestorm.coop. Firstly, we're presenting a conversation that I had with an organizer with the group Flower, which stands for Frontline Organization Working to End Racism, about opposition to a neo-Confederate rally scheduled to take place on February 2nd at Stone Mountain Park, about half an hour's drive outside of Atlanta, Georgia. We talk about the longstanding history of this rally, which originally was a KKK event, its resurgence alongside the rise of far-right activity, and some of what's been done to oppose it in recent years. We also talk about what to keep in mind when standing against this event and how to learn more and plug in, plus much more. This group is at Flower United on Twitter, and that's a great way to get rapid updates as February 2nd draws nearer. Also a great way to keep updated and read more about the history of this event, plus to see a long list of endorsing groups, you can go to flowerunited.org.
Next up, I spoke with journalist, metalhead, anarchist, and anti-fascist Kim Kelly. Kim is an editor at Noisy, the Vice music site, and has contributed radical content to Teen Vogue and many other platforms online and in print. For the rest of the hour, we spoke about the upcoming Black Flags Over Brooklyn anti-fascist and anti-racist heavy metal festival that Kim and others are organizing January 25th and 26th in New York City, alongside a day-long anti-authoritarian leftist gathering. We also talk about the culture wars in metal, taking radical space in mainstream publications, and more. You can find much of Kim's writing at noisy.vice.com. More about Black Flags Over Brooklyn and about how to get merch or participate just by searching on the web for that title or finding the Kickstarter or Eventbrite. It's also got a page on Instagram and Twitter. If you want to hear our interview with one of the headlining bands, Dawn Raid, about politics and extreme music, check out the link in our show notes. And if you want to hear a much longer version of this conversation with Kim, which I suggest, check out the podcast version if you're listening live on the radio. And here's an official public statement from the Unistoten camp, which has been posted up on their website, unistoten.camp, somewhat of an update to last week's episode concerning the raid that occurred at the Gedimten access point. Quote, "The Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs have by absolutely no means agreed to let the Coastal GasLink pipeline tear through our traditional territories. On January 7th, at the Gedimten access point, the RCMP used excessive and brutal force. We expected a large response. We did not expect a military-level invasion where our unarmed women and elders were faced with automatic weapons and bulldozers. While the chiefs have a responsibility to protect the land, they also have a duty to protect our land defenders. Our people face an incredible risk of injury or death, and that is not a risk we are willing to take for an interim injunction. The agreement we made allows Coastal GasLink to temporarily work behind the Unistoten Gate. This will continue to be a waste of their time and resources, as they will not be building a pipeline in our traditional territory. You can find out more information from this call-out and ways that you can specifically support by visiting unistoten.camp. That's unistoten.camp. Stay tuned to the end of the show for a few important announcements, including upcoming events and requests for call-in to support prisoners.
So, hey, thank you so much for coming onto the show. Would you begin by describing what the group Flower is and what its general aims are?
Thank you for having me, and of course, I'll do that. FLOWER is an acronym for Frontline Organization Working to End Racism. We came together towards the end of 2018 after hearing that the Ku Klux Klan, neo-Nazis, and various racists wanted to have an event at Stone Mountain called Rock Stone Mountain 2. And our aims are to disrupt and oppose the Klan and all their supporters from having a good day on Stone Mountain, which will be on February 2nd.
Gotcha. Can you say anything more about what is going to be happening on February 2nd?
Sure. So the Klan wants to have a rally at Stone Mountain the day before, on February 2nd, which is the day before the Super Bowl, which is in Atlanta. Stone Mountain is maybe 15 minutes away from Atlanta, and the Super Bowl will be taking place the day after. And so they're probably using this to, like, gain an audience and get into the news coverage and, like, attract members. And this is the same group that tried and largely failed at having a rally in 2016. Mm. One of the reasons we also think that they scheduled this was because during the governor election here in Georgia, one of the candidates who lost said that she would support, like getting rid of Stone Mountain, and the people organizing this event believe that is an example of white genocide, and so they're coming to defend the monument.
Ah, the almighty white genocide, eh?
Yeah, we're in a tug we had again.
Yeah, thanks again for that, white genocide. So you've mentioned Stone Mountain, and you also mentioned what went on in 2016. Could you talk a little bit about the Stone Mountain's history, especially as a nexus of racist activity and opposition to that activity?
Sure, I can do that. So historically, Stone Mountain is a beautiful granite mountain in North Georgia, and it was historically a meeting place for different indigenous groups in the area to meet. However, in 1915, it was the site of the beginning of the second rise of the Ku Klux Klan and their second incarnation, the first being during the Reconstruction era, and this time being in the 1910s through until the era of the Civil Rights era. And so that this was a site where they built a large cross and set it on fire on top of Stone Mountain back in 1915. There's a carving on the mountain now of President Jefferson Davis of the Confederate States of America and two Confederate generals. And that carving was started by, I'm probably going to mispronounce his name, Goodston Burglum, who is a KKK member, and he's also the person who started the construction of Mount Rushmore.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, so there's a connection to two horrible monuments, and the monument stopped being carved. There was, like, a lapse in it, but after Brown versus the Board of Education case in 1954, which desegregated schools in the United States, the state of Georgia bought the mountain and recommissioned someone else to complete the carving as sort of a spit in the face of the idea that there would be desegregation in the United States. And it was the carving was completed only, like, in 1972, and the park was opened up on April 14th, 1965, which I actually didn't know this until recently, was the 100-year anniversary of Abraham Lincoln being assassinated. And the Klan had cross burnings on the mountain for 50 years annually after 1915. More recently, though, in 2015, after Dylann Roof massacred multiple people at a historically black church, we saw across the country neo-Confederates and their like having flag rallies with the rebel flag. And this happened multiple times in 2015 at Stone Mountain. And each time, though, like, it morphed more and more into it being explicitly, like, not just like heritage, not hate people, but even more explicitly racist and mainly filled with Klansmen and neo-Nazis. And so they decided to, they were like, well, if this is all who's going to show up, we're going to have it be as explicit as possible. And they called for Rockstone Mountain, which was to be on April 23rd, 2016. They said they wanted to light a cross on top of the mountain, and they got a permit, and people in Atlanta organized against it, and there was a counter-demonstration called All Out ATL, and they ended up, I believe you could definitely argue, scaring a lot of people, a lot of Klansmen and other racists away from showing up to the rally in the first place, because on their Facebook they had like over 1,000 people interested in going. But then on the day of, only 30 showed up, and over 500 counter-protesters showed up, and along with a couple hundred police officers defending the 30 Klansmen, and their event was ruined.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and since then, a different Klan group in 2017 applied for a permit to do a Klan rally at Snow Mountain, and they were denied on the basis of what happened in 2016, where things got out of control, and this specific rally, Rockstone Mountain 2, they were also denied a permit, but they say they're still going because they said the First Amendment is their permit.
Okay. Okay, then. You said that, you mentioned the Klan, and I don't remember if you said this or not, but can we expect that, like, neo-Confederates are going to be the ones who are going to be showing up to this event?
Yeah, I think that's the most likely demographic who's going to show up, is very virulent neo-Nazis, Klan types. League of the South has said that they plan to attend this. There was a podcast that where one of the organizers of Rockstone Mountain 2 was on it, and the podcast organizer asked him, like, maybe you should try to appeal to, like, white working class people in the South by toning down your rhetoric more. And the Rockstone Mountain organizer said, no, that if I tone down my rhetoric, then the Jews have won, he claimed.
Oh, wow, okay. Well, all right then. there's no really appropriate response to that. So, you've mentioned, you know, a little bit about this political moment right now. We've obviously seen, like, a pretty marked rise in, you know, white supremacist and, like, neo-Nazi activity in the U.S. But would you talk a little bit more about this political moment in relation to fighting this event? And what about what's been going on recently can help folks contextualize rallies like the ones at Stone Mountain?
Sure. So, the rally in 2016, April 23rd, it's less than 3 years ago, but it feels like it was a world away. This was literally only months before the specter of Antifa had arrived on the scene of the public imaginary, and this was during the rise of the alt-right, but the alt-right hadn't really caught on the American lexicon yet until probably around the time of Trump's, like right at Trump's election. And since then, we saw through 2017 and the first half of 2018, I would say, like, the rise and relative fall of the alt-right as a possible street movement. And now I think what we're seeing is generally, as far as what we're seeing in the streets in particular, is we're seeing the people who are most hardened and most violent still wanting to show their heads and trying to get a chance at attacking and oppressing minorities and marginalized people.
Yeah. And anti-fascists, too.
And yeah. Anti-fascists, yes.
Yeah. What sorts of solidarity is, I guess, I'm saying you, but I'm what I'm really meaning is Flower. What sorts of solidarity are you hoping to see? Are there things that are, you know, still needed?
Sure. We need people to spread the word. get it out there in their communities and towns, like what's happening and on social media. If you live in the South, we would advise that you arrange travel plans to come out to Stone Mountain the day of and to be part of the counter demonstration and to organize people in your area to travel. Fundraising can always help, especially like this sort of organizing on a mass scale. It requires money. We've had to spend money. And hopefully there won't be arrests, but there is always the possibility of repression, and we'll need money to be able to bail our people out. If you don't live in the South, I would say the same thing goes for like raising money, and I'd also say if there are any KKK or neo-Nazi organizers in your area, maybe you could do an action or a thing around them and express doing it as a solidarity action with flour.
Cool. That's really solid. So if people do come out to oppose this event, what are some things they should keep in mind?
Okay, well, first and foremost, it's going to be a long day. I can't, at the specific moment, recall what time that they want to be there, that the Klan plans to be there, but we want to be there before they're there. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a long day, so you should bring energy bars and food and water. And early February in Georgia, it's still pretty cold out, mm-hmm. so you're going to want to dress appropriately for the occasion. Check the weather before you go out to see how cold it is and what the wind speed is on that day. Mm-hmm. Show up on time. We'll release further details on specifics of what time the counter demonstration is closer to the event. But be on time. You know, make sure that you get a good night's sleep the night before and that you're alert and your faculties are in order. Some important things to keep in mind as well is that a mask law does exist in Georgia. Mm-hmm. It was it was used last time. 9 people were arrested at Stone Mountain in the counter demonstration for All Out ATL last time, though all the charges have been dropped, and 8 of those arrestees were arrested for allegedly wearing a mask. Though it should be noted that that mask law was originally invented to try to stop the Ku Klux Klan from showing up in masks, and the law specifically says that masks are banned at demonstrations in Georgia for the purpose of intimidation. Mm-hmm. Though, of course, we can't expect the police to make value judgments on what is and is not intimidating. Right. We have no faith in the police's ability to do that. And there are currently cases right now going through the courts that are trying to fight the mask law from a counter demonstration against the National Socialist Movement that happened in Noonan, Georgia, last April. If you're going as a group, if you're going to be coming to Stone Mountain as a group, you should plan to leave as a group, and you should plan to be able to move together as a group. If there are people in your town or region who can provide mass action trainings, you should maybe reach out to them to learn to see what they can have to offer you and your group. And you and your group should arrive with an idea for what you want to happen on the day, and you should also, as a group, be ready to coordinate with other groups and have group cohesion throughout the day so that we can all achieve our goals and stop the Klan.
Definitely. Yeah, thank you for bringing up the mask law issue. I know that there's a similar one on the books in North Carolina. Is there, like, have they posted a public list of events that's going to be happening so that people can sort of get a sense of what the shape of the day is going to be? Or have they not done that yet?
I'm not entirely sure what you're asking.
If like the so-called Rockstone Mountain people, have they posted like at 9 a.m. there's going to be a thing at this, you know, at this time there's going to be a speaker. Is there like a list of events?
I don't believe they have.
Okay.
At most, they're currently talking about on social media about they're in the hole money wise and they need to fundraise, so they're trying to plan some sort of after party event.
Gotcha.
To raise money.
Gotcha. That's good to keep in mind, though. So this event's going to be happening in a little less than a month at the time of our talking. I'm sure there's been, you know, updates in the media as far as what's going on. Do you care to comment or give some words on any of those?
Sure. So some other folks, some other organizations that include the Southern Poverty Law Center, Georgia Alliance for Social Justice, and I believe the Democratic Party are planning to have an anti-Confederate monument event in the city of Atlanta, like more than 15 minutes away from Stone Mountain, on the same day. And just so that everyone knows who plans to come to Flower, that's not the same thing. That's in a completely different location. And if you want to come and directly oppose racists, you should come to Flower.
Cool. Thanks for that. Is Atlanta a big Super Bowl town?
Well, the Falcons aren't going to be in it, so I mean,
yeah,
I'm not excited, but I'm sure there will be thousands of people coming into town, and I'm sure the next day all the sports bars will be packed with people watching.
I bet. Cool. Yeah, I had no idea, so I just figured I'd ask somebody who's maybe more familiar. How can people sort of stay informed about this event, and how can people plug in if they want to show up?
Yeah, so you should follow Flower on Twitter if you want to keep up with it, and on any of our other social media platforms, but especially Twitter. Mm-hmm. And there will be an announcement ahead of time with much more specific details about the week of and the day of, and just keep your eyes posted for that, and it'll be on our Twitter.
Is that the @FlowerUnited handle?
Yes. Cool. We also have a website that you can go to. There's a link in our Twitter bio for it.
Those are all of the questions that I had prepared. Is there anything that we left out of this interview that you want to see included?
I think everything's been included, but I will just say one last time to spread the word and get ready to make this trip. And we want this to be as broad-based as possible. We want as many people there with as many different ideas and plans for the day as possible.
Excellent. Hey, thank you so much for your time, and, you know, best of luck out there and in the days leading up to it.
Thank you for having us, and thank you for amplifying the message.
Again, you can follow Flower on Twitter @FlowerUnited, and go to their website, flowerunited.org, to see a bunch more material, points of unity, a list of endorsing groups, and ways to spread the word. You're listening to the first little piece of the track Inviolate by Ragana. Ragana is a doom metal band from the Pacific Northwest, and they are going to be playing at Black Flags over Brooklyn.
So I'm here with journalist, activist, and metalhead Kim Kelly. Kim, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Hey, thanks so much for being interested in what I'm up to. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I should have asked this before we started recording, but what's your preferred pronoun?
Oh, I'm she, her.
Okay. Would you tell us about the upcoming anti-fascist, anti-racist extreme metal fest that you've organized for the end of January?
What a mouthful, right?
Yeah.
So this event is called Black Flags Over Brooklyn, which took me forever to come up with. Naming things is the hardest part of being in the music industry, I swear. But so, yeah, it's kind of, it does what it says on the tin, right? It's explicitly anti-fascist, anti-racist, anti-oppressive, anti-all of the terrible things that we fight against, metal festival. And I wanted to, I mean, there are plenty of festivals that are, just by virtue of which bands are booked to play, like, would fall into that category, right? But I wanted to make this explicit and make it like clear that this was going to be like a political space as well as a musical space, and that there was you know, there were intentions behind making this a political space, because I wanted essentially to create this event that's kind of what I've always wanted to go to, like go to a show and just know that all of the bands there are gonna like respect me, respect what I'm about, respect my friends. We're all fighting for the same things. We see the world the same way, more or less. There's not gonna be any, you know, any Nazis or crypto fascists or just like general terrible bootlickers wandering around harassing people. Like, it's gonna be, for lack of a less, I suppose, overused word at this point, like a safe space for metalheads to come together and listen to heavy metal and talk about revolution and know that things are going to be cool.
That's awesome. Besides it being explicitly uninviting of racists and crypto fashion, whatever, and them not being on the stage, it seems like you're creating an atmosphere also where the expectations are changed of maybe like how people in the crowd interact with each other.
Yeah, there's, I mean, one of the side, I guess, program's a strong word. One of the side things that I've also cooked up to go with the two, well, the night and then day of music, is we're going to have a free, open to the public sort of, we've been calling it a vendor market, but it's a mix of like organizations like New York Anarchist Black Cross and Pop Gym and obviously Antifa and just various organizations, as well as radical booksellers like AK Press and PM Press. Hey, Market's going to be out there. Versa's going to be there. Then there's just various like artists and designers. And I have a friend who, she's also playing the festival. She's bringing up some special products from her vegan, cruelty-free skincare line. I wanted to add sort of a community aspect to it too, right? Because not everyone cares about heavy metal. I get it. And not everyone is able to afford to pay to go see a show, right? But they might be interested in the idea of the event. They might be interested in, you know, hanging out with their friends in a space that's like that. So I wanted to make sure there was a free all-ages option for people in the community who wanted to come out. And I think, I mean, I guess that line of thinking is maybe a little unique in the metal world, because there are so many people in metal who are just wonderful and who are completely against any kind of bigotry and against any kind of racism or fascism. Like, we're definitely out here, but there aren't that many explicit spaces for people to come together and talk about these things or just be together in public and like have fun. I mean, most metal shows, I feel like if that's a different thing, perhaps in especially the punk world where politics are very much more at the forefront in a positive way. And I don't know that much about like indie rock and hip hop and like those other worlds, because I'm just not well versed in those scenes. But I think it's a rarity that you come across an event that is very much heavy metal and very political. And I just wanted to make a space for all of us who have been talking about these things online, or maybe talking amongst our smaller friend groups, and just kind of all come together and be like, yo, like, this is a community, like, this is a scene, this is a movement, like, this is our section of heavy metal, and like, let's see what we can do to make it bigger and more inclusive and show more people like this belongs to you too. Like, heavy metal belongs to you too. That's always what I've tried to convey and get out there in my work. Like, there are so many, I mean, still just the way the genre is, there are so many straight white cis men involved in the genre, and that's fine, but there are so many other people of other identities who have incredibly important roles to play in this world, or just who even appreciate this music, and they're so underrepresented all across the board. And that's part of why, you know, we have these reactionary right-wing fascist politics that have taken root in some smaller, dirtier corners of the scene. And I just wanted to, with this event, I just wanted to create an alternative to that, I suppose, and create a space that just underlines, like, heavy metal is for everyone except Nazis.
There's an argument that I've heard a lot of times that bringing, like, good politics into whatever genre of music can make it corny, you know, mediocre, whatever. Like, there's definitely some hip-hop that I've heard in the past that the messages are right on, but they just don't have a beat that sticks. But I like the fact that, like, your lineup reflects some of what you're talking about like shifting the vision away from like normative cis hetero male dominated projects and focusing on projects that bring their politics, bring their
queerness, and whatever else to the forefront. Can you talk about who y'all are showcasing for the festival?
Right. And that was, I'm glad that you noticed that. I'm hoping everyone noticed that because it was so intentional. The lineup was, I mean, a lot of it was me just texting my friends who I thought would be cool to play and being like, hey, I'm doing this. Are you in? But also a lot of thought went into making sure that, you know, the stage wasn't super white. It wasn't super cis male. It wasn't, you know, super straight. Like, I think we put together a lineup that showcases first a bunch of dope bands who are just great people and great at what they do, who also have good politics, but who also represent what metal could look like and what metal does look like if you look beyond like the white guy with the guitar trope that we're just constantly fed. So the two headliners that we're bringing in from a little further away, Dawn Raid, who I love them so much. They're an anarchist black metal band from the north of England. I've seen them play a couple times. They're incredible. And then Cloud Rat, which is a grindcore, like a sort of more experimental grindcore band from outside Detroit. I've seen them a million times, and they're dear friends. And I think they just kind of represent exactly what I wanted to do. Like, their politics are dope, their music is fantastic, they're beloved by people who don't even care about politics, which is still a funny thing to wrap your head around, I suppose. But like, they could, like you said, like a lot of the some of the pushback against, I suppose, the more heightened visibility of politics and political thought in metal is that some people just care about the riffs. This is the line we get, like, oh well, but the riffs, right? It's how people justify listening to shitty bands too. So like, well, their riffs are good, I don't care about their politics, mm-hmm. whatever. So it was important to me to put together a lineup that like any metalhead off the street could walk in and be like, yo, this is awesome. And then finding out later that there was a bunch of like queer people and people of color and like outward anarchists, that might be like, oh, okay, so maybe, you know, it's not lame to add politics to your music. And I mean, this is heavy metal we're talking about. Like, tell Black Sabbath or Napalm Death or Bolt Thrower or Nuclear Assault or any of a million wonderful, extremely important bands that politics don't matter. And like, saying that heavy metal isn't political is saying I don't know shit about heavy metal. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of other bands. I mean, because I'm putting it together with the help of two other organizers, but it's like my baby, right? I'm being a little bit selfish when it comes to the lineup. So I put together a bunch of bands that I want to see. Another one that I'm just hugely excited about is Regana. They're an anarcho-feminist, like, black doom duo from the Bay Area. And I've never seen them. I've been obsessed with them for years.
Oh, they're so good. They played a house show here in Asheville a couple of years back. And yeah, they're just so good.
I always miss them. And they're, like, they're just a perfect band. Like, they're perfect. And we have Race Trader, who are... They're back. They were gone for ages. They just came back. They have a new record out. And they, like... They're so beyond right on. Like, also Manny, the vocalist, he's been so awesome. He helped me made the video. We have this a little promo video that we put on the Kickstarter, and he made that, which is just so nice of him. There's just a bunch of, I'm just like, oh, people are so nice. It's so nice to have people support this thing that I'm doing, because it's like, it doesn't always happen. Like, it's being very, I mean, the flip side to being, you know, a very politically vocal and vocally leftist anti-fascist person in metal, whether you're a writer like me or whether you're a band, is that like there are a lot of people who don't like that, and they'll tell you, and sometimes they'll send you death threats, and sometimes they'll do this and they'll do that, and it's not always fun. So it's another reason why I feel like it's so important to focus on building this community, is like to make it a little more worthwhile for people to be like, okay, if I come out and say, you know, I'm anti-fascist, I'm a metalhead, fuck Nazis, fuck NSBM, like, this isn't acceptable, maybe take a little bit of the sting out of it. Because, I mean, I've definitely lost a lot of friends, I've probably lost business opportunities or whatever by being so vocal about where I stand, but, you know, I have a lot of good friends and I have a community around me that kind of balances it out. And I want everyone to feel like they have access to that kind of community, because, I mean, we're... The only people that are going to save us is us. And I want people to know that they're part of an us.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really important. I totally understand the creating an event that you're really excited to attend yourself. Like, I've taken part in helping to organize the Anarchist Book Fair here in Asheville, and that's regionally, there's not really anything like it that happens on a regular basis. And so, but I don't get to enjoy too much of it because I'm too busy running around like a chicken with my head cut off. But have there been other sorts of like festivals that you're sort of modeling this off of? You had mentioned in your IGD interview that like Europe gets all these really good anti-fascist metal like showcases and concerts and what have you put together, and that's something that you wanted to bring to the US.
So there's, I haven't really found like what I'm doing. I don't know if it's specifically been done before. I could definitely be wrong because I don't know what's happening outside of English speaking countries because it's hard to know. But it's sort of a two-pronged thing. Like, I'm so jealous of things like 161 Fest in Manchester and I think Fluff Fest, which I think it's somewhere in the Czech Republic. They're very, I mean, 161 Fest, you know what you're going to get, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's really specifically metal, but I know they had Dawn Raid play, and they've had, like, punk and, like, some metal bands play before. So it's kind of a more politics-first approach. Whereas the metal festivals that I'm sort of drawing inspiration from are things like Roadburn or like Migration and Gilead Fest here in the States, Northwest Terror Fest, like Shadow Woods, like these smaller, like very, very intentionally curated, very community oriented, I guess, boutique metal festivals where it's like you walk in, you know exactly what the atmosphere is going to be like. You know the bands are all going to have sort of a thread binding them all together. Like Migration Fest, for example, which went down in Pittsburgh this past year, which is a collaboration between 20 Bucks Spin and Gilead Media. And I was basically friends with all the bands on the lineup and like tons of people in the crowd. It was just such a beautiful experience. And it was, there weren't that many bands that were, I mean, there are definitely bands that I know their politics and they're great, but it wasn't like a main feature of the whole thing, right? So I wanted to take like that cover and that experience of being in that room and add in the political aspect too, because I think that'll make some people comfortable or make them curious or even just give them something to talk about. I just wanted to pick and choose all the bits that I like the best from other festivals and put them together. I mean, this year it's kind of short, it's like a full day and then a night show, but I mean, who's to say that we can't expand in the next few years? Like, I want this to be, this isn't just going to be a one and done. Like, I want this to be something bigger.
I guess that's how you build a scene, right? Is you, like, you make a thing, bring people in, make it happen a few times, and that creates a momentum.
Right. Like, I don't, like, I think it'll, I mean, touch wood, but I think it's going to be pretty awesome. Like, we put so much work into it, and people have been so supportive, and people are so excited. It's going to be awesome, and then we'll hopefully have some money left over that we can use to book other shows or work on a bigger event. Like, I've talked to some people about some things already. Like, people seem interested in doing this in other places, and I would love it if other people that aren't just me take this idea and, you know, run with it. Like, I want every metal show to be anti-fascist.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't achieve that myself, if other people get involved, like, maybe we can get there.
You had said a thing earlier, sort of like quoting the position that there's no politics in metal and politics in metal ruins it or whatever. But and I kind of wanted to address that for a sec. Like, as a journalist, you work in the music scene a lot. You're reviewing stuff. You're attending concerts. Do you get much of a sense of the mainstreaming of any politics, good or bad, in metal? Like, is it just a neutral thing, or is that no politics in metal position when you hear it? Like, does it just mean just the politics that we don't talk about, like fucked up misogyny and like even closeted racism, if not outright fascism?
So metal is so interesting. So I spent like 18 years of my life in just totally immersed in it. So the prevailing thing, like if you pick up any metal magazine, okay. Trying to think how to phrase this. I'm like kind of working through this question in my head too, because I hadn't really thought about it, like what the prevailing mood is. But I'm pretty sure the prevailing mood is, it comes down to the riffs. Like, if a cool band puts out a cool record, that's the immediate thing that is going to be discussed in most metal publications and in most other publications. Like, it's going to be about the music, which is fine. And then, you know, there's, if you dig a little deeper, like, it comes down to like who's making the music, right? And to some people, that is incredibly important. And to some people, it's not as important. Where it comes down to things like lyrics. Like, some people want to know what is being said, and they want to know, you know, what the intent is, and they're not happy about it if the intent is, you know, fucked up, or the lyrics are fucked up. Then some, then other people who just like the music want to be kind of left alone to like the music. Like, it's, politics and metal is interesting, because I don't think a lot of metalheads care. I mean, maybe in their personal lives, like as human beings, like we have to care about politics, like everything's political. But I think a lot of people look to metal as sort of an escape. There's such a deep tradition of fantasy in the genre itself. And I think that is one of the things that people, well, I know that's one of the things that people tend to resent when you show up. You're like, hey, I understand that you like this record a lot, but the person that made it is a Nazi. So maybe you should reconsider listening to it and supporting that. And some people will be like, oh yeah, totally. Ugh, I didn't know that. That sucks. And then some people will be like, well, fuck you. I like this record. I'm not supporting what he's saying. I just like the music. And this is like the great sort of struggle that we're seeing. I've been seeing for a long time, but right now it's much more heightened because the political environment in the States right now and in the world is heightened. You weren't going to be seeing, 2 years ago, there weren't going to be bands in MAGA hats or talking about Trump or feeling as emboldened as they do to co-sign things like white nationalism, or like fascism, xenophobia, transphobia, just all of these things that we see coming out. And the way that I think that Gamergate and Alt-Right has had more of an impact on certain small, terrible corners of metal than like we've even really investigated yet. Because, I mean, the internet culture, when you take a bunch of angry, like, straight white cis dudes and put them in this place and let them talk about things, a lot of them are into video games, and a lot of them are into just online culture, and like a lot of them are into heavy metal, because it's a very aggressive, like, sort of, because heavy metal as a whole, like, it has this very aggressive, cathartic sort of vibe to it, and that attracts different kinds of people. And a lot of the people, not a lot, some of the people that end up in those spaces end up in very terrible, terrible political mindsets. And I know I'm rambling right now. It's the kind of question that I could chew over and probably write thousands of words on. But I guess it comes down to the prevailing notion within a lot of the metal scene is that the music is all that matters. And then it breaks down into how people personally react to that. Whether it's people saying, well, no, the person making the music matters just as much, or people saying, no, you're trying to ruin this for everyone by trying to make us care about things that shouldn't matter in entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Just off the cuff, I wonder if, so you've seen this in punk over the years, like there was wars through the 80s and the 90s between Nazi punks and not Nazi punks or anti-racist punks or sharps or whatever other part of that general subculture that was struggling against racists having space in that scene, which like pushed it out and pushed it out from the mainstream and created this hegemonic position of, I mean, not that everyone's perfect in it, but of like general anti-racism and general like kind of left politics in punk, which doesn't mean people aren't misogynistic or homophobic or anything else. It's just that that's less acceptable. But it also created this other world of like parallel punk scenes. Like I'm kind of reminded of, let's see, some like 6 years back or whatever, when the massacre at the Sikh temple in Wisconsin happened, that shooter had been a member of a punk scene that a lot of my friends had also been in punks in Milwaukee, but didn't know that this band or this scene existed, because there was a whole separate arena that racists were taking to produce the music that they wanted to hear. Do you think like that, does that exist in metal, or do you think that creating anti-fascist spaces or trying to make most of the scene anti-fascist or at least unacceptable of racist ideas would create some sort of secondary thing? And maybe it's not anyone's responsibility that it gets created or whatever, but
interesting. And I know a little bit about this. My partner who's helped me organize things is a sharp. So I've heard a lot from that perspective. It's sort of a yes and a no and a huh. So in metal, there's this, you know, explicit like subgenre. Well, subgenre doesn't really do it the right credit because it's musically different. There's this thing, right, called NSBM, National Socialist Black Metal, which is sort of a blanket term for Nazi black metal, like fascist, white power, white supremacist, like all of that garbage, right? It's kind of wrapped up with this bow of NSBF. And that there is sort of a parallel scene devoted to that. Like, again, those like small, dirty corners of the metal scene that just flock to this stuff. But the trouble, I think it would be a lot easier to eradicate and ban and just no platform that entire scenario if it was as isolated and sort of self-segregated as I think the punk scene sort of saw happen with their counterpart. But the trouble with metal is that you have your outright explicit NSBM, which is outright fascist, outright bigoted, like outright garbage bands. But then there are so many bands who have connections to them or who have views that aren't explicitly fascist or explicitly like neo-Nazi, but they get pretty close, or like they sit on the fence, or like they play a festival with a band who has open views, or they do a split with a band who has open views like that. Or they're on a label that put, maybe they're totally nice people, but they're on a label that has put out records by that. Like, things are so there's so much cross-pollination, especially in the more extreme scenes, like black metal, which is sort of predicated on this whole anti-human, black metal is war, nihilism is everything, sort of aesthetic, which makes it a lot easier for some people to fall into that fascist mindset. There's so many tendrils reaching out into otherwise respectable parts of the scene and parts of the music industry, and I think we've been seeing a ton of pushback to that, I think, in the past several years, especially because I think a lot of people had their political eyes or whatever opened after Trump won, and we saw all the carnage that entailed, and people in the metal scene, some people at the least, a growing number of them, have reacted by pushing back against these bands, against the fence sitters, against the fascists and the racists and the bigots and the transphobes, like against all of this garbage. In a, like, we've seen a lot of shows getting shut down. We've seen a lot of call outs on the internet. We've seen bands getting kicked off labels for doing things. We've seen bands getting kicked off shows. We've seen people being a lot more confrontational in their disgust and their lack of acceptance for this stuff. And that, I think that is having an impact. But I think it's also having an impact in a little bit of a negative way, because bands who otherwise might have not ended up as far on the right or on, you know, in the garbage side as they might have done otherwise have sort of felt pushed, or felt maybe not pushed, but they felt more comfortable kind of continuing to radicalize. Because there's this pushback against, like, the SJWs and, like, the metal moral police and the Tibber Gores who are trying to make metal safe. And we've seen bands kind of double down. And it's just really an interesting time to be in metal and to care about politics and be trying to make it better. Because even I've been writing about metal for a very long time, over half my life. And, you know, when I was younger, I definitely want to, like, call myself, you know, when I was younger, I was kind of one of those, but like, those riffs are everything people, right? Like, I was like, okay, well, clearly fuck Nazis and fuck sexism and all that, but like, I really like this band, so, you know, like, it's just music, whatever. And as I got older, I realized that that was kind of a terrible viewpoint to take, and it was just me showing my, you know, my white girl privilege there by being like, oh, well, I can listen to them, but like, I won't buy their record. Like, it was like a personal evolution for me, like a whole process of becoming more political and becoming more intersectional in those politics, and realizing, okay, this stuff isn't acceptable and this is actually violent and hurtful to people, so this needs to not be happening and I need to not support this. I need to actively come out against this. And, you know, that's how I ended up where I am now. And I think a lot of other people have sort of been going through that process, and maybe they're older than I was, but, or maybe it's newer to them, but it's still very important. And I think that happens to a lot of metalheads, like where you get into metal because you're 12 years old and you love Metallica. Then you just kind of find your way into other things, whether it's death metal or grind or doom, and you just love this music so much, and then you find out more about it, and then you find out more about the community, and then you have to make these decisions about, you know, how you're going to interact with it and how you're going to interrogate it and how what you're going to accept and what you aren't. And I think that's an important process for every metalhead and every music fan. But in metal, the stakes are just a lot higher because, like, we literally have, like, murderous-ass Nazis out here. Like, that one of our, like, founding real, like, origin myths, like Norwegian black metal, is predicated on, like, angry white guys murdering each other. One of them's a Nazi who lives in France now. Like,
we are you talking about Burzum or?
Yeah. Like, we have such a history of violence and intolerance and just sort of aggression. And some of that is like.
Yeah, killed him for being gay, right? Or accusing him of?
No, that was a different guy.
Oh.
It's the thing, right? And being into black metal is such a mindfuck when you think about these things. But that Varg killed Euronymous allegedly over like a business thing. You're thinking of, I think it was Faust from Emperor who murdered an Algerian man for coming on to him. That was a different thing. Part of the same general, that whole, you know, part of that whole scene.
So the whole Norwegian like, black metal scene at the time, like.
Yeah, so a lot of our history is just sort of, you know, built on blood. And it's hard to... I can see why somebody who's into black metal like, might be like, oh, well, like, okay, like, you're listening to black metal, like, and you're telling me I can't say this because it's offensive or I can't use this rune because it's fucked up. Like, who are you to say any of that? And it's like, yo, I'm not anybody. I'm just letting you know that maybe you should reconsider because you look like a fucking asshole.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like it's interesting too how the like that whole like this is my space, this is what I'm gonna do, like I do what I care about thing is, I mean, it's not a terrible position to take as long as you're willing to hear that kind of critique. And like even some of the, I think like some of those origin story from that period stories about like pagan folks burning down Christian churches that are built on ancient sites, like there's something kind of cool about some of that, but yeah. I don't know.
Heavy metal is very good at, I mean, it's very theatrical. It's very fantastical. It's very over the top. It's very ridiculous. And it's, you know, it's fun. Heavy metal rules. It's the best thing in the world. And I want everybody to feel like they belong here and they can have access to these spaces unless they're the kind of people who actively want to deny those things to other people because of who they are. Like, metal's the best shit ever. Like, why would you try to keep it away from someone unless you're a fucking asshole?
Mm-hmm. So, have you received or do you expect pushback from reactionaries about the fest?
We've gotten, early on, like right after we announced it, the venue got a couple like angry emails that they showed us because they thought they were funny. One of them, the theme that, I think there's a couple of people that were pushing this theme of like, oh, we're going to call the cops on you because one of the bands you booked has an anti-cop song. And I was like, yeah, the NYPD is definitely going to spend their time being mad about that. They have people to murder. and as far as other pushback besides that, I'm sure it's out there. Like, I am absolutely sure and so that it is out there. But I've at this point, I know... I can read the room. Like, I know what forums and what Facebook pages and what comment sections to avoid if I don't want to see people being mad about this and / being mad that I exist, because people hate me so much. So much. So the fact that it's me doing this thing, I'm sure, has rustled a vast quantity of reactionary metal jimmies. But the thing is, that's been really funny throughout my whole career. Especially because before I was working at Vice, I was a touring person. I was a merch person for a bunch of bands, and I've been all over the country. I've been to like 20 other countries. I'm pretty recognizable. I stand out. And nobody has ever come up to me and said shit. And it's very, very rare that people will actually reach out and email me and be like, yo, you're an asshole. Like, I mean, Nazis are cowards. We know that. And that filters through into metal Nazis. And, you know, in terms of the event itself, I would certainly hope that things will go smoothly. I know that we have a very, very well-trained security staff, many of whom come from the New York punk scene and are not people you want to fuck with anyway. And of course, like, you know, the community here knows about this event, and I'll have a lot of friends hanging out that Nazis probably wouldn't want to tangle with. And it's just also the idea of, it, like, say, if... So the event is happening at a venue in Greenpoint, in Brooklyn, which is sort of a notorious Proud Boy hangout. Now, I think they're mostly, at this point, licking their wounds and trying to figure out what to do now that everyone knows that they're violent fascists.
Gavin sold us out!
My God, that fucking guy. Yeah. But so, if somebody like that decided to come up and try to like start something, there's going to be literally hundreds of metalheads and anti-fascists and anti-fascist metalheads who are there trying to have a good time. And if you show up to fuck with their good time, maybe you should just consider that before you show up and confront literal hundreds of people who don't want to talk to you. I feel like that doesn't work very well for Nazis. You think they would learn that. But, I mean, that's like the worst case scenario. Someone like shows up and tries to cause a ruckus and then security gets rid of them. Like, I think the people that hate this are going to continue talking about how much they hate it on the internet and, you know, do whatever it is they do with their free time. And the people that are stoked about it are going to come out and have a good time. And, you know, I have a lot of faith in the metal community. And I think that this is going to be, I hope it's going to be an important moment for us. Like, if I can pull this off, that means that anybody can pull it off. And, you know, that's what I want. I just want more of this. I want to be the spark, man.
So, speaking of pushing buttons, you've notably also, you've published articles on liberatory political practices like labor and class organizing, anarchism, feminism, anti-fascism, political, like, or prisoner rights for magazines like, and websites like Teen Vogue, Noisy, where I believe you're an editor, The New York Times, The Guardian, NPR, Atlantic, I could go on, Gizmodo, you've published a few things just recently on there. I think that that's a thing about your writing that's really inspiring for a lot of people and interesting is that you decide to take a leap and argue that there was a readership outside of explicitly political or rad political rags. How has that been? And do you think that opens doors for other people with liberatory politics to take on mainstream platforms and use those voices?
I hope so. I mean, it's been really encouraging and really gratifying, like the amount of headway I've been able to make into these spaces. And a lot of that is because I've already sort of been entrenched in New York media and like media in general for a long time, like specifically music media, but it's not the biggest world. And like you meet people, once your circle expands a little bit, like it becomes a lot easier to figure out who to pitch where or like whose name to drop where. Like, which comes with, like, that is a huge privilege that I have in doing this work is that I'm involved in media already and I know a lot of people and I can sort of, it's not as hard for me to break into places because I have like a cool resume and I've had a bunch of nice bylines. Like, it's a lot easier. And like, I definitely acknowledge that is a huge thing that most people don't get at all, which is why I'm hoping that making space for these places, like these ideas and kind of like slithering into these fancy publications with my scary anarchist politics might make it easier for other people to find their way into them. And now, you know, when I was starting out, I had friends who helped me out, who were contacts. And now, like, I can be a contact for other people. Like, I've definitely put other people in touch with editors at different publications. Working advice means I know everybody in editorial, so that's always an easy one to help people out with. Like, I want to be, you know, people helped me out a lot when I was younger, and they helped me out a lot when I was trying to sort of pivot to more outright non-musical writing. And I want to be that person for other people who want to follow in those footsteps. And I mean, that makes me, it's so funny to talk about my career or whatever, because I'm like, I'm not even old, I swear. Yeah, I turned 31 2 days after the fest, which I...
Oh, you're a baby.
Yeah, well, I booked it for my birthday. But yes, I've gotten like, I've worked so, so fucking hard, but I've also had like a lot of good luck and I have a lot of privilege and I've had a lot of people to help me out, and that's really important. And I think, you know, I'm not like, I'm a fucking cis white lady who's mostly straight, but I'm from like a very like rural working class background, and those are people like me don't get to do this sort of thing. And that's something that I think has been an interesting aspect of me writing about these things, these ideas for other more mainstream publications, is like not a lot of rednecks show up in your inbox being like, hey, you want to hear about Trump's America? I can just call my dad real quick. Can you please stop acting like everything is our fault? Mm-hmm. Like, class is something that doesn't really get spoken about that much in terms of, like, class and socioeconomic diversity isn't something that comes up a lot in New York media newsrooms, because most people don't get to do this shit unless they have nice professional parents and went to a fancy school and, like, could do all that stuff. Like, I didn't do any of that stuff. I just worked really hard and did a bunch of weird stuff And I don't know. Things worked out okay. And I'm hoping that I can help other people. And I'm hoping that I can get these ideas in front of people who need them. Because when I was a 16-year-old kid growing up in a nature reserve in the middle of nowhere, if I had found like a clear, concise explanation of what capitalism is or what anarchism was, like, I feel like I would have gotten to where I am a whole lot quicker. And I'm just hoping that I can be, helpful, do some good while I'm here.
I should ask this before, but like, did you come to politics through music? I know that we're all like a work in progress, and we don't just like jump from 0 to 60, most people, I would imagine. But like, did you come to politics through extreme music, or was it like a separate thing that just sort of like you were able to meld the two?
They were very separate for a while. I mean, I went to my first protest when I was 16, when Dick Cheney came to speak at the neighboring high school. And I remember having my little No War in Iraq sign and like my John Kerry shirt, because like I didn't know there was anything else. It sounds so pretentious, but I got into politics because I was very into Russian literature, because I was that fucking kid. And I could only read so many works by Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, and so many, you can only read so much Russian period fiction before you start wondering about, like, Russian history. And there's a very, very short line from, I'm curious in Russian history, to, so what's up with this revolution thing? And the even shorter line to, like, revolution sounds like a pretty good idea. What are these guys talking about? So I was just sort of a lazy, like, baby Marxist for years, because I didn't have any really, like, political friends, because I was just in the metal scene. And politics wasn't something that came up then. And I didn't really think to mix the two until I got a little older and was in that college and started learning more about feminism. And then from then, like, I was very into feminism, and then I learned more and read more and developed a more intersectional perspective. And like, it's still a work in progress. Like, I ended up as an anarchist, which is about as far as you can go, I guess. They think we're the weird, I guess, but it just makes the most sense to me at this point. But it took a while to get there. And then in terms of mixing it with politics, it was only really a few years ago that I felt comfortable, like, publicly, outwardly in my work, being like, yo, this is where I'm at. Like, people already knew that I was, like, the no-fun feminist, like, racism is bad, Nazis aren't cool, like, hectoring older sister of the metal scene. But it's only in the past few years that I've just been like, you know what, all my chips are on the table. I'm a fucking anti-fascist anarchist who does not want Nazis to exist. And I'm just going to write about that and also tell you about some dope riffs I heard the other day. I've carved out a very very specific niche, but something that's been really gratifying is seeing that other, like, younger and newer writers and publications have sort of also, I'm not saying that I inspired anything, but I'm saying that other newer writers and publications are doing that now. Like, there are a bunch of webzines and blogs and websites who are just very out there with their politics. I think that's phenomenal, and I want that to be more the case, because it wasn't like that when I was growing up, and it wasn't like that when I was in my 20s. But now it's like a lot. If you are a metalhead who hates Nazis, it's a lot easier to find something cool to listen to than it was when I was 16. Like, it's really nice. Like, I wish things would have been like this when I was younger, because I feel like I would have not made a bunch of dumb mistakes and found a lot more satisfying politics before I was, like, old enough to drink. But here we are. Everybody grows and everybody learns. And one of the things I really want to do with this festival and just in my work is to sort of make up for the fact that I was kind of a dummy when I was younger and didn't care about politics. And be like, okay, like, yeah, that wasn't ideal. No one comes out of the womb quoting Emma Goldman, but now I want to take this position I have and all this privilege and all this platform I have and be like, yo, like, you can also end up like this. Like, there's more to life than the riffs, and the riffs are dope. But I, like, maybe think about who's making them, and maybe think about who feels comfortable going to see them play, and, like, maybe let's try to make this a little bit better, because the world's on fucking fire. And if heavy metal can't be your sanctuary, like, where the fuck else are you going to go? This is where all the freaks and weirdos and, like, angry young kids end up for a reason. And if this place isn't accessible to certain kinds of angry young kids because of who they are, how they're born, what they look like, then what's the fucking point of any of it?
Are there any resources that you would point people who are interested in anti-fascist metal to? Any blogs, any books, any record labels in particular?
Oh man, there's so many things now, which is great. In terms of writing, I mean, be a little selfish and point to the stuff that I do, because I do a lot. That's basically all I do at this point, is push my anti-fascist agenda on Noisy.com. It's amazing the things that they let me get away with. It's really funny. But there's also, I really respect what places like, and this is the name, it's metal, it's Toilet of Hell. They're a website who just do, they have really good politics and they do good work and they're funny, which is important because metal has a tendency to be humorless. I'm sure I've definitely been accused of being humorless. I think I'm funny, but, and also there's a site called Metal Sucks. I've known them for a long time. I don't agree with everything they've done or written, obviously, but they've been very dogged in exposing and interrogating sort of racists and fascists who are in big bands in the scene, which is important work. And there's a bunch of good writers that are also covering these things. In terms of record labels, I mean, there's always Alerta to Antifascista, which says it all in the title, but you've got things like... goddamn. There's so many. I wish I could just send you a list, but this is for the radio, so I have to, like, use my brain real quick.
I mean, I can take the list that you send me and put it in the show notes easy, because it's a podcast, too.
Oh, right on.
So, Halo of Flies puts out some good stuff, right? On, like, Gilead.
Yeah, Halo of Flies and Gilead, and, actually, I've been really impressed with what Prosthetic Records has been doing. Hmm. They're, like, a major indie that's been around for a while, and I think... they've sort of struggled to find their identity, but in the past year or two, they've signed so many, like, very anti-fascist bands. Like, they have Dawn Raid, they have Neckbeard Death Camp, they've got Funeral Chic, they've got Wildspeaker, they've signed, there's a couple things I can't mention that they've signed that are dope. Like, they've just leaned in real hard to supporting, like, lefty, anti-oppressive metal, and it's so cool to see a big label do that.
I want to do a shout-out for sure to RABM.
Yes, all the best. I go there like once a week to find new music.
Yeah, I wish they would update more because that top article's been sitting there for like a month now. But
that's the trouble with volunteer stuff, right?
Like, yeah, right.
You can't be like, yo, do this unpaid labor for my benefit, please.
But there's so much like so many perspectives and so many albums coming from different parts of the world that they review that they have some degree of permission to like. Post stuff there about them and like so many different genres between like what's some cool, you know, folk metal, what's some cool industrial music or like Moroccan like folk punk or that has liberatory politics. I don't know. It's a pretty awesome resource.
I found some of my favorite bands on there. Like this band Karubo, who are like this intensely like anti-colonial like folk black metal band from Brazil. They find the coolest shit. And, like, they have really, they recently, well, not that recently, kind of recently translated a really great article, I think, from, it might have been the Spanish scene, just about, like, how to eradicate fascism in metal.
Oh.
Like, what you can do. And they said a lot of very clear-cut, like, you know, show zero tolerance, force this out, like, do research, talk to people. They said a lot of really good, like, actionable suggestions for people that I think... is important for people to see because a lot of people ask like, okay, like there's Nazis here. Like, what do we do? This is in the '80s. You can't necessarily go up and just fucking physically do something about it. Cause a lot of the scene is also bled into the internet. So like I think a lot of people at the very least want to do something about this. And I'm hoping that a lot of them can meet each other and make friends and start plotting at this event that I'm planning.
That sounds awesome. Where can people find your writing? Like, what are some good like go to spots? Like, do you have a personal blog that you syndicate from? And also, where can people either get tickets or like find out how to attend the you know the fest?
For my stuff, I've worked at Noisy for the past like 4 years, so the vast majority of my recent music writing is on that site. It should be on the homepage. And in terms of getting more info about the fest, we have a Facebook event page, which is, I had to turn my Facebook back on to to do it, which I'm still salty about, so I hope you get this. So this has all the info on the lineup, and like there's, you know, a discussion happening. And we have just regular tickets on Eventbrite. We have individual day pass tickets and then a weekend pass. And also we have this Kickstarter thing, which ends in, I think, a day or two. The 13th it's over. And there's more, there's info there. And we have a whole bunch of like, ticket bundles and merch bundles. And my poor boyfriend's been screen printing like a maniac, getting a bunch of fuck NSBM and Metal Against Fascism patches ready to go. And yeah, I guess if you just Google us too, we've been, we've gotten some cool write-ups in like Brooklyn Vegan and Metal Subs and things like that. I'll probably write about it on Noisy at one point. Just be like, yo, this is biased as hell, but here's my cool thing I'm doing because I work here and do that once in a while.
Well, you're doing some awesome work, and thank you so much for chatting, and I wish I could be up there for the show, but I hope it goes off without a hitch, and it's the beginning of a beautiful trajectory.
Well, thank you so much, and hey, maybe next year, right?
Yeah. Or bring it down to the South, you know?
I feel like that would be dope.
Coming up in New York City, on Sunday, January 20th, there will be a free conference entitled Yiddish Anarchism, New Scholarship on a Forgotten Tradition. The conference will be conducted in English, will be free, run from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the YIVO Center for Jewish Research at 15 West 16th Street. More info can be found at yivo.org/anarchism. Finally, here's an announcement about the anarchist political prisoner, Eric King. We hope to be featuring more about this next week in an interview. Meantime, this is up at supporterickking.org. Quote, Eric is still being held at USP Leavenworth after being assaulted by staff at FCI Lawrence. He is still being held without charges, disciplinary write-ups, or any disciplinary hearings for more than 140 days. He is still under the jurisdiction of FCI Florence, and this month, when he tried to call his wife for his one phone call a month, he found that their communication was restricted and he was unable to call. Eric remains without an explanation, as everyone refuses to provide any information as to why his phone communication has been cut off. This is incredibly problematic not only for Eric and his family, but for all political prisoners. If the BOP, the Bureau of Prisons, is able to block communication for Eric, despite laws and regulations, what is to stop them from restricting communications of other political prisoners from their support and family? Eric is being held in absolute segregation without even a cellmate at USP Leavenworth, and has been now for over 137 days. This, added to his previous time in isolation, makes his time served about a year of his total prison time, which is very traumatic and triggering. Eric is still dealing with the emotions that have resulted from the incidents that took place at Florence, as well as that he has been unable to see his family for over 4 months now. He missed holidays and birthdays. The day he was attacked was the day following his wife's surgery for cancer. Therefore, he missed being able to process subsequent medical problems with her. He is faced with the realization that for the remainder of his sentence, he will be far from his wife and kids. The letters and support he has received have been amazing, and he is so thankful. While he processes the trauma and grief, we ask you to stand with him and continue to show support. We ask that folks call as often as they can and to as many offices as they can. Take a block of time and call the same number over and over, request different staff's voicemails, get creative, but show them that we are watching and ready to protect our friend and comrade. We got word that Eric was planning on going on hunger strike beginning on January 11th if he didn't have answers. As there is a prolonged delay in mail right now, he may have already begun. If this is the case, it is important that we hit the phone lines as hard as possible on Monday the 14th. The number for FCI Florence, which technically has him under its custody, is 719-784-9100. That's 719-784-9100. Ask for the warden or assistant warden, the legal department, Counselor Quintana, Counselor Rivera. If denied, demand that the person answering the phone take down a message. The Bureau of Prisons North Central Regional Office can be reached at 913-621-3939. That's 913-621-3939. You can ask for Director Jeffrey Kruger. If denied, ask to speak with his assistant. If denied again, politely demand that the person answering the phone take down a message. Here's a sample script. Hi, I'm calling about Eric King, number 270-90045. To demand that his phone restriction be lifted, it is unacceptable to take away a person's calls to his wife and family without any notice and without him being brought up on any charges, unquote. Thank you for all your help and continued support. Until all are free, Eric King Support Crew. This week we released a new Error 451 episode in our podcast stream, this time an interview with Kelly Kaneko about Leap Encryption Access Project, VPNs, and pseudonymity online. If you haven't, visit our website and take a listen. Or better yet, subscribe to our podcast by visiting thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, clicking the podcasting link, and following the instructions there. This week we released a new Error 451 episode in our podcast stream, this time an interview with Kelly Kaneko about Leap Encryption Access Project, VPNs, and pseudonymity online. If you haven't, visit our website and take a listen. Or better yet, subscribe to our podcast by visiting thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, clicking the podcasting link, and following the instructions there. If you appreciate the work that we put into making the show happen week after week, sometimes more than once a week, and if you can afford to help us out, please consider making a donation to The Final Straw. If you visit our website, you can click the donate/merch button, and there you'll find a few options. We can take one-time donations via PayPal or Venmo. We can take ongoing donations via LibraPay. You can buy t-shirts, stickers, buttons, and more via our Big Cartel store, or become a sustainer via Patreon and make monthly donations. The Patreon option has lots of thank you gifts, including what's been mentioned already, plus homemade mixtapes, and an option to get a zine made of any interview we've conducted, getting those words into the hands of translators and folks who have hearing impairments. If you can't afford making a monetary donation, no worries. Please just tell your friends about the podcast. Share an episode on social media, write us an email or a letter to suggest content, or just say hi. You can also contact your local community radio station and say that you want us on the local airwaves. We have a weekly 59-minute and FCC-friendly episode out every Sunday afternoon up for radio stations to download and use. More information on that can be found at our website by clicking the radio link at the top of the site. As an aside, we've just started sharing political prisoner button mix packs for Blue Ridge Anarchist Black Cross. The buttons feature the faces of 54 and more to come political prisoners held by the U.S. government in packs of six and mixed up according to generation and types of movement the folks were involved in. The sales go to benefit the activities of Blue Ridge ABC and also to share the information about political prisoners, get their faces out there, get their support sites out there, their names, get them talked about, and get them all free. Prisoner support sites and distributors should contact Blue Ridge ABC at riseup.net for details on getting deals on the buttons. If you want to make your own and have a button maker, the PDFs of the buttons are up at brabc.blackblogs.org for download for free.